is simple perfection. There's nothing that's harder to find. Someone to lead us, protect us and feed us, and help us to make up our minds. We need a man that's sophisticated, quiet and strong and well educated. Where to go? What to do? Could it be somebody super like you?
A good evening, and welcome to Bizarre Bazaar. I have some stuff for you that we could talk about tonight. A quick take on the Manti Te'o scandal and some other titillating and twisted tales. Have I piqued your curiosity? I understand in this day and age of instant gratification, you want to know now. But you're just going to have to the wait.
Sometimes it's hard to keeping the faith.
God damn, I love that movie. That, of course, being Step Brothers. I was watching that earlier today, and it kind of inspired my opening there. You know, even funnier than the movie is when I was, and this will probably come as a big fucking shock to a whole lot of people, is I actually did go to school for broadcasting. And when I was there, a lot of people, faculty, students, people at the radio station, etc.,
fell into this trap quite a bit, where they had their, as I like to say, they had their shit they wanted to get in, you know? Like they had that gag or that perfect lead-in, that pun, whatever the fuck that witty goddamn gag was, they were going to get it in come hell or high water, whether it worked or not. And you get a lot of instances like that. You know, sometimes it's hard to keeping the faith. You know, but they had their build-up, they had their... But actually what would happen is more the opposite of that. Where instead of being grammatically incorrect, they would say the name of the song incorrectly. So as an example, instead of saying, sometimes it's hard to keeping the faith, they would say, sometimes it's hard to keep the faith. You know, so, but that's not the name of the fucking song. So either way, it just doesn't work and it's just a big pile of shit. Sometimes you just gotta let it go. So anyway, Manti Te'o. If and you aren't familiar with the story already, Manti Te'o plays football for Notre Dame, and he had quite a tragedy in his life when his grandmother and girlfriend died on the same day. Fuck! The hell you say? Both died on the same day? Shit! Despite this tremendous hardship, Te'o gutted it out and stayed with the program and played ball, thus becoming a media darling, winning the hearts of millions, and the media just couldn't get enough. Only one problem, though. Turns out his dead girlfriend ain't really dead. In fact, she doesn't even exist at all. So all the tall tales Manti had given about his life and meetings and burgeoning, beautiful, busting relationship he had with her was 100% bullshit. Of course, now this begs a myriad of questions. The whys and wherefores, who were the players involved, and by that I mean the people involved in the con, not football players. You know, all of these things have yet to be exposed, but one thing for certain, the girl never existed. The stories from those involved do not add up, and there was lie after lie after lie, and all of this has the makings of an awesome hoax gone awry, and I love it. Now, obviously, Te'o is claiming innocence, but that's also complete bullshit. To what extent or at what point he became involved, you know, that I'm not sure. But at some point along the way, he knew what was going on and perpetuated it. Why was this done, you may ask? To what means? What's the end result? Exactly, precisely, not sure yet. Though I have a theory, but I'm just going to wait and see. Just like everybody else. But why is any media hoax ever done? For accolades? For monetary gain? To just get noticed? To make a point? It's been done before with varying degrees of success. You know, look not too far back, a few years ago, when Joaquin Phoenix was trying to convince the world that he had turned into some wacko reclusive poet wannabe. Of course, it was just a publicity stunt for that piece of shit movie that I don't even know the name of and went nowhere. But it got attention and probably sold a few more tickets than it should have. And even better was that writer, wrote the memoir, which was championed by Oprah, became book of the fucking century or whatever, and turned out the story was heavily embellished. Basically, it was a bunch of shit. A million little pieces. Fry. James Frey. Yeah, wrote a book about his drug addiction and struggles to kick, but it was all shit, and he had to go back to Oprah and get publicly spanked. He did, however, sell probably millions of more copies than he would have normally. Or remember J.T. Leroy? The addict/hooker/tranny/author, and I don't know what the hell else. This one actually went a lot further. Now, Laura Albert was the actual author and brainchild behind this fictional character of J.T. Leroy, and had her sister-in-law, or some relation like that, actually go out in public and pretend to be this J.T. Leroy, who went to events and hobnobbed with the literary elite, and who in turn were all up in arms when the hoax was revealed, as they were kind of exposed as the obnoxious, pretentious asshole heads they are. And, you know, there's a number of examples like this. You know, one of the best I know of is the novel Naked Came the Stranger. Now, if you don't know this one is great. The book came out in like 69 and was basically contrived by this guy who worked for Newsday, Mike McGrady. Now, McGrady essentially felt that American literature had become so torrid and base that the more vulgar something was, the better it would do. I mean, you know, in a nutshell. So he assembled some other 24 writers who were all in on the plan. And what they did is each person wrote a chapter of the book with the intent of making it as bad, as nonsensical, pretentious, unarty, and just as shitty as possible. But with plenty of sex. The intent was to make a terrible, horrible, putrid book on purpose, but fill it with sex and see how it does. They came up with the nom de plume Penelope Ash as the author. Funny enough, some of the chapters had to be edited because initially they were too good. The book had to be completely void of any value whatsoever. Of course, since I'm talking about this, you can pretty much guess what happened. It spent a number of weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. In fact, the participants felt so guilty about the amount of money they were making off of this book that they came clean revealing the hoax publicly. And guess what? They sold even more copies off of that publicity. Now, there are many more examples, but you get the idea. And don't confuse what's going on here with the Tao thing with a prank or a gag. This isn't like an April Fool's joke or even a lie to cover something up. This was done by someone or someones for some intended outcome. What was the payoff here? Well, that's what's got me hanging. I mean, directly, it's hard to see the end game. Was this all a story to bolster his image? Well, he did win a number of trophies and awards as a result of the story. Some have come right out and said they wouldn't have even voted for him if not for the feelings of sympathy. Which is really fucked up when you think about it, since athletic awards are supposed to be based on athletic performance, not who's got the sadder story. So fuck you, whoever's voting for somebody for that. Back to the point, though. Winning awards in college doesn't necessarily lead to any financial gain. But enough hype and a PR machine behind you could lead to a frenzy in the NFL draft. You could then potentially get picked way higher than you would have otherwise normally, and that could definitely translate into millions of dollars. This is the only money train I could see right now coming out of this. Elevated draft position, higher signing bonus. Despite all the unknown, two things are certain to me. Manti Te'o is a liar and an idiot. I just don't know what the proportions are, and I guess I'll have to break out the slide rule and figure that one out. But speaking of idiocy, think for a minute how schemes like these are hatched. Where is the breeding ground? The media, of course. If the news cycle wasn't so goddamn eager to get out a fucking soundbite, maybe someone would have taken the time to follow up on the story, to see if the girl was really dead, to talk to her family, anything. But none of that happened because being a star football player just isn't enough. There has to be a story. The heartstrings must be plucked, tears must be jerked. Grab their hearts and minds and their ratings will follow. But this all goes hand in hand. A scam only works if the media picks it up, and they only pick it up if we buy it. If we didn't watch or we didn't pay attention, it would die as quickly as a fictional girlfriend. Now, where's the end game here? Where's the payoff? that has yet to be revealed. Obviously, what the intended result is over and done with. But that doesn't mean this can't parlay into something else. You know, spin this right, and you can bet your ass they are working on it right now. And he could become a PR media darling who could become the next contestant on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. I mean, after all, he's unquestionably single. So whatever the conclusion to this bizarre tale may be, remember, none of it matters if we ain't listening. They create what we devour, and it only works if we tilt our heads back and slurp down what they regurgitate. Much like a mama bird or Alicia Silverstone, or, maybe even more appropriately, two girls with one big-ass cup. So sit back, relax, tilt your head back, because it's time to be open up. See what I did there?
to know where your dick has been. I said, that's the way it is when you're a woman. Everybody wants to know why your cunt's not been. They can't masturbate to their own lives, so they have to masturbate to yours. They can't masturbate.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day.
That's right. Now, we were talking about tricks and gags and hoaxes and scams played upon the media for fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about one of the best hoaxes played that millions and millions fell for. So let me take you back to November of 1974. Six members of a New York family were killed. The parents, Ronald and Louise DeFeo, were shot in bed while they slept, along with their two sons and two daughters. The sole remaining family member, Ronald Jr., aka Butch, was arrested for the crime, convicted, and sentenced to prison. With the family dead, and Butch in no position to inherit the place, the house went up for sale. The horrific nature of the massacre unnerved the otherwise quiet Long Island neighborhood, though no supernatural activity was associated with the house at 112 Ocean Avenue. The following year, a new family, the Lutzes, moved into the house. George and Kathy Lutz, along with their three children, said that shortly after they moved in, their six-bedroom abode became a hell house. It seemed that perhaps the demons that drove Butch to slaughter his family were not in his head, but in the actual house. An unseen force ripped doors from hinges and slammed cabinets closed. Noxious green slime oozed from the ceilings. A biblical-scale swarm of insects attacked the family, and a demonic face with glowing red eyes peered into their house at night, leaving cloven-hoofed footprints in the morning snow. A priest called upon to bless the house was driven back with painful blisters on his hands, famously told by a demonic voice to get out, and so on. Now, the Lutzes got together with author Jay Anson and told him the horrific tales of their hell house. Together, they published a book in 1977 that quickly scaled the sales charts. This book was supposed to be a truthful account of the horrors happening inside this house. The book entitled The Amityville Horror, A True Story. A local television crew did a segment on the house, bringing in several self-styled quote-unquote ghost hunters, including Slimeballs Ed and Lorraine Warren and other alleged psychics. All agreed that a demonic spirit was in the house and that an exorcism would be needed to stop the activity. The Lutzes left the house and took their terrifying tale with them. And as William Peter Blatty did when he promoted The Exorcist, Anson vouched for the truthfulness of this fantastic tale, saying, "There is simply too much independent corroboration of their narrative to support the speculation that the Lutzes either imagined or fabricated these events." Many, many people expressed doubts about the events in the house. Researcher Rick Moran, for example, compiled a list of more than 100 factual errors and discrepancies between Anson's true story and the actual truth. Joe Nickel, author of Entities, Angels, Spirits, Demons, and Other Alien Beings, and who personally visited Amityville and interviewed later owners of the notorious house, also found numerous holes in the Amityville story. So over and over, both big claims and small details were refuted by eyewitnesses, investigators, and forensic evidence. Still, the Lutzes stuck to their story, reaping tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars from the book and film rights. Later, the truth behind the Amityville Horror was finally revealed when Butch DeFeo's lawyer, William Weber, admitted that he, along with the Lutzes, created this horror story over many bottles of wine. The house was never really haunted. The horrific experiences they had claimed were simply made up. Jay Anson further embellished the tale for this book, and by the time the film screenwriters had adapted it, any grains of truth that might have been there were long gone. While the Lutzes profited handsomely from their story, Weber had also planned to use the haunting to gain a new trial for his client. George Lutz reportedly still claims that the events are mostly true, but has offered no evidence whatsoever to back up his claim. The Lutz's account was most likely influenced by another fictionalized story, that of The Exorcist. In fact, it is not much of a stretch to suggest that The Exorcist strongly influenced the Amityville story. Recall that The Exorcist came out in December 1973, and demonic possession and hauntings were very much in the public's mind when the Lutzes spun their stories of diabolic activity a year or two later. The revelation that the story was based on a hoax has led to embarrassment, especially among the handful of paranormal experts who verified the fictional tale. The Lutzes must have had a good laugh at the expense of the mystery-mongering ghost hunters and self-proclaimed psychics who reported their terrifying visions and verified the house's demonic residence. Though the story was made up by the Lutzes and further sensationalized by Anson, there were real victims of the Amityville Horror. In addition to the murdered DeFeo family, the subsequent occupants of the Amityville home have suffered a continual stream of harassment by curiosity seekers, horror fans, and gawkers who want to photograph and tour their infamous house. Then there are the people who, fooled by the film's and book's tagline, think they are partaking of works based on true events. To this day, the fact that the Amityville Horror story was an admitted hoax is still not widely known. But, as they often say, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
was like a nightmare. I'm looking at my mother and father dead, my sister. I said, my God, I got scared. I ran out of the house, jumped in my car, ran down the street, and got my friends and came back to the house. I guess the Abbeville Horror really is supposed to be me, because I'm the one that got convicted of killing my family. I'm the one that said did it. I'm the one that's supposed to be possessed by the devil.
That there is the voice of Family Slayer Butch DeFeo from a documentary that I have no idea why it was made. There is no debate as to the validity of the Amityville Horror. Those involved have come clean and said it was bullshit, so I don't really know what they were hoping to uncover with this, but... So I got an email here saying that the Blair Witch Project was much bigger dollar-wise than Amityville. Yeah, that's true, but Blair Witch was not a hoax. It went under the guise as being found footage and was presented as being real, but that was all marketing. They didn't expect to fool the public into believing this really happened. Actually, I was at Sundance in 99 when this was shown there, and they did some real creative marketing ploys to get folks in to see the flick. They had plastered missing persons flyers all over the place that had pictures of the film crew on it. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they took out an ad in the local paper and stuff like that. So initially, maybe some were duped into believing this was real. In fact, one of my friends totally bought it. He called me and left me a message saying it was like the scariest thing he ever saw. And I had to see it. I had to see it. But, you know, take in mind this was coming from a guy whose scariest movie he saw before this was probably, like, Beetlejuice, I don't know. Anyway, the point is they wanted to create interest in the movie, but they didn't expect the public to think it was real after they saw it. I mean, how's it fucking real when they get killed in the movie, but they were all there at Sundance? They weren't trying to defraud the public, it was just some clever marketing. And there were other movies that portrayed themselves as real also, but nobody thought it was legit. The Last Broadcast comes to mind, and it was the same concept. Some dudes went looking for the Jersey Devil and Yabba Dabba Doo, same thing. Even it came out before Blair Witch and was a much better flick in my opinion. And I think now, as I thought then, that Blair Witch sucked. Troll Hunter came out not too long ago, like 2008, something like that. Same thing, same style. Documentary film crew, monsters, you know, and I love that movie. So anyway, Blair Witch. Not a hoax, not the same thing. I don't know why, but I'm skeptically curious about the Lone Ranger flick coming out, though. I think it had potential to be really cool, but... it being a Disney production and a comedy of sorts, it's probably going to suck. And Depp as Tonto, I mean, I like Johnny Depp as an actor, but he just makes too many clunkers for me. I thought this was going to be, when I first saw or read about it coming out, I thought this was going to be a darker flick, but I guess it's just more family-friendly fodder from what I understand now. So, yeah... I guess I just talked myself out of it. I don't care about seeing this anymore. In fact, I hate it. Fuck Lone Ranger. It could have been cool. Tonto is a seething, bloodthirsty spirit warrior biding his time and putting up with Kemosabe until the right time when he scalps the fuck and tomahawks the cowboys to death. Hey, maybe in this incarnation we'll find out that Kemosabe really means white douchebag.
Lone Ranger.
Yes, Tonto. I am a Lone Ranger.
Kemosabe, me help you fight outlaw.
But Tonto, don't you have a family? Anyone?
No. Me lone like you. Me want law here too, for all.
All right, Tonto. You'll be a lot of help. We'll ride together.
Me glad, Kemosabe.
And just very briefly, since we're on the subject, There are a number of different theories and interpretations as to what kimosabi really means, varying widely and even going so far as to some saying in some Native American tongue it stands for chicken shit. Now, I don't really think that's the case, but the one theory that I've heard that I believe, because it seems to be the most analyzed and backed up by the most evidence, is that the word came from one of the writers of the early radio show. The story of the Lone Ranger was originally a radio show, and one of the writers went to camp somewhere in Michigan, if I remember correctly. And the name of the camp was Camp Kimosabi. And he was led to believe by somebody there that that translated to trusty scout. But that isn't necessarily the case either. Just because somebody at the camp said so doesn't make it true. Native American language experts in the field have turned up nothing with their investigations into different variations of the word trusty. But another linguist had a brainstorm. He looked up in a dictionary, an ancient obscure dictionary for the Ojibwe tribe, the word Gimuzabi means to peak. And it could also mean different, like he peaks or he who peaks. And yes, he who peaks sounds like something you'd get arraigned for in pervert's court. But he also continued that there are several words with the same prefix, gimuj, meaning things like to sneak up on someone. Therefore, it's quite plausible that gimuzabi means something like scout. Gimuzabi is pronounced pretty much the same as kimosabi and would have been roughly spelled kimosabi at the turn of the century. And to further back up this theory, other Indian language experts have established that that the camp Kimosabi was in an area inhabited by the Ottawa, who spoke a dialect of Ojibwe with the same word Gimuzabi. There were also Potawatomi in the region who spoke a closely related language with a similar word. So while the trusty part may have been added on or some kind of hyperbole, Kimosabi probably really was a Native American term for scout. And since we're on the subject, what about Tonto himself? Again, different theories, different interpretations. There's a Potawatomi story that uses the name for wild one. But different experts, again, disagree and say these things are not so. Alternate theories are that Tonto is Spanish for fool. Well, Tonto is Spanish for fool, but the idea that maybe one of the script writers took the Spanish translation to make Tonto, I don't know. But considering the Lone Ranger's habit of sending Tonto into town to get information and the townspeople's habit of beating the shit out of him while the Lone Ranger was back at camp, that lends some credence to that theory. The sad truth and the real irony is that as much as we want to sit around and debate and analyze and examine, the truth is anybody who could lend any real answers to these questions are no longer available. And perhaps, just perhaps, that is the greatest hoax of all. So, before I shuffle off to Buffalo here, you may ask, what's the name of that tune? What's the moral of today's story? Is it that mega hoaxes seldom, if ever, work? Well, think about it. We wouldn't know about them unless they got busted, unless someone somewhere debunked the perpetrator's claims and cried bullshit, forcing those involved to come clean. And perhaps that's the real problem. In order to pull off a real good hoax on the public, several folks have to be involved. This could range from two people to hundreds, thousands. And as Benjamin Franklin once said, three may keep a secret if two of them are dead. And therein lies the rub. The more elaborate the ruse, the more people need it. And the more people involved, the more likely it will fall apart. When lie begets lie begets lie begets lie begets lie, sooner or later it becomes impossible to cover your tracks. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Now, I'm not saying all hoaxes are doomed to failure. I'm sure some of them work, but if any ever went the distance without being revealed, how would we know it? So, until next time, bye-bye.
We should have stopped at Roy Rogers.
And I should have.